Hi, and welcome to another Dose the Gems podcast where EMS meets ED. I'm Dr. Candace McDonald.
Hi, and I'm Robin Bollinger.
And we are super excited to have you today on our show. So as we're heading into EMS week, we know that the world of EMS can be completely exhausting. You know, the world of emergency services can cause us to put our cranky pants on sometimes. It can cause us to do a lot of complaining. You know, and some of those gripes can lead to burnout. So on today's show, we're going to talk about preventing burnout by advocating for change. We know that it's easy to complain about the way things are and the way things have been in the past, but becoming a change agent is one way that we can actually gain power and prevent career burnout. I conducted a study a few years ago, and the research indicated that burnout in emergency services happens for a number of reasons. One, job exposures. We know that what we're exposed to has an impact on our mental health. Another reason was feeling like we have a lack of control in the workplace. Poor culture and workplace dysfunction was another reason people burn out. And another indicator was not being able to balance work-life balance. And if you're a volunteer, not being able to balance the work-life and home-life balance. So we're going to kind of dive into some of those things because we know that ignoring unaddressed job burnout stressors can have a significant consequence on you as an individual and on the organization. So today we're super lucky to have two great guests. These are two people that I truly admire. These are two people that don't just sit back and accept the "this is the way we've always done thing" mentality. These are two people that have long careers in emergency services, and they've made a huge impact in our industry. And so before we dive into meeting these really amazing people and getting to hear about all their advice, we're going to get to know them a little bit. So we'll start with Shelley, if you could kind of introduce yourself and share a little bit about your bio.
Oh, sure. How are you guys doing? Candace, thank you so much. Robin, thank you so much for having me on the show. And it's great to meet you, James. Yeah. So I am Shelley Carter. I have 5 amazing sons and I have 1 amazing husband. My family is my life. I recently retired last Friday from the Hartford Fire Department after 21 years, 9 months. I was going to bring it down to the days, but I figured that's enough. And I also, so I retired as a captain. At the time of retirement, I was the only Black female captain in the state of Connecticut. And of course the only one in my department. I love the fire service, but it was time for me to go. I also created a girls firefighter camp, the first of its kind in the state of Connecticut. Actually, I believe in the Northeast. And basically we teach young ladies everything there is to know about careers in police, fire, EMS. And military now. And so it's a phenomenal program. Young ladies are ages 13 to 18, and it has been a huge success here in Connecticut. And so when I got the text message email from Dr. C, I was like, absolutely, I will be on, and I would love to talk about just my life and the fact that burnout really does exist. And it's a serious problem for us in the emergency services. And it's great that you are bringing this information to the forefront. So that's who I am. Oh, let me tell you about my new job.
Yes.
Oh,
because you were okay, retired for what, like 2 minutes?
like 30 seconds. And then bam, I had a new job. So I just recently was hired for as an operations manager for a Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection Division of Division of Emergency Management and Homeland Security. And so that's who I am right now. Again, first and probably only Black female to hold this position, and super excited about working with an amazing team of people at DEMIS.
And I know that you will do absolutely great things.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, congratulations on retirement and on your new job.
Thank you.
So awesome.
Thank you so much, Robin.
Sure. James, why don't you tell us about yourself?
Certainly. My name is James Garcia. I'm a retired paramedic. I started off as an Army medic, transitioned out of the military into EMS, worked 911, public service, private service for 35 years. Retired 2 years ago, and I'm currently working as a music instructor and the happiest man in the world. My big claim to fame here, or whatever, is I'm the creator of the move-over law. In 1994, I was struck while working at a scene and found out that EMS were considered pedestrians at emergency scenes because nobody had ever advocated and given us authority. So I worked for 2 years to pass and move over law in South Carolina, then spent another 6 years trying to convince anybody else in the country this was really a problem. And it took a little while, but finally after dash cams and some other incidents came out, we realized the scope of police, fire, EMS towing, it's the largest killer of public safety of all fields, you know, ever. And we saw how big the problem was, and suddenly we started, let's do something about it. And so I used my move over law. I got it passed in every state. Now it's in Canada, New Zealand, Australia, working on Ireland at the moment, because this is a good thing. You know, it's common sense, but common sense isn't the law. You know, there needs to be something there that we can fall back on to say, you know, this is the law. You have to do this. It's not just a good idea. And so even though I've retired from EMS, I'm still a very strong advocate for the move over law and do whatever I can to travel and promote it and promote awareness and improve the law in different places and work with whatever agency I can that's interested in bringing this up. On the side there, I also run a international medical nonprofit called Share the Health Cambodia. Went on a visit there a couple of years ago or in 2008. And while we were walking around visiting these beautiful ancient temples, there were people falling down, dying left and right. There's no 911 to call. There's no ambulance to pick them up. There's no hospital to take them to. There's just a total lack of any medical care infrastructure there. I started working with their government, and they gave me a hospital, an abandoned hospital in the middle of the jungle. I worked there for a year and saved 10,000 people in a year. And that was in 2008. And since then, I've been working on smaller and other minor projects. Right now, I'm supposed to be in Cambodia right now, starting their first and only EMS system. As I said, not an ambulance in the country. And I got the job to, you know, help them create it right as COVID hit. So I'm in a COVID standby right now. And that's giving me a little bit more time to work on my move over stuff, but it's still very important to me. And so amazing. That's me. Thank you.
I'm so boring compared to you guys. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, I love, you know, both of you, that's something you have in common. You both went out and started these great programs that are impacting the lives of others. I mean, it's just so amazing and something that we can look up to. And James, I do have to do this plug. So who was the first person that allowed, or the first organization that allowed you to write an article?
The first article was Manny Garza in GEMS in 1995, said this guy's trying to get this law passed. Thank you, Manny. She retired, but she's awesome. And if it wasn't for her, this wouldn't have got out there. And they kept up with it as I progressed, as it was passing, as it was moving around the states. Yes, it was GEMS and EMS Insider that promoted this and got the attention to it so that other people became aware it was a problem. Thank you, Gems, AJ, and everybody else. I sure do appreciate it and value all their effort.
Absolutely. And I think that's the cool thing about like organizations like Gems and some of our other groups is that, you know, we can use those platforms to you know, as a way to share our voice and make a difference. So we definitely had to plug that in. So
absolutely.
As we move into this topic, so, you know, Shelley, we'll start with you. You know, what are some of the common things that you've witnessed in emergency services that you feel lead to burnout? And what advice do you have for our listeners to help cope with those things?
So the one thing that came to mind when I was thinking about this was the fact that minority groups, let's just say, because we know that the fire EMS is predominantly a white male organization nationwide, worldwide. And so my first thought process was, what would lead to burnout for women and especially women of color was the fact that we spend a lot of time having to prove that we belong. Mm-hmm. And so, we go the extra mile always. We're always the one that stays later. We always have to pick up the heaviest tool, or we always have to run the extra mile in drill school, or do better on all the testing that we do to promote. Because we know that if we are not number one or number two, then we may be overlooked or skipped for promotion. With all of that, and then myself raising a family, you know, trying to make sure that my boys are straight, my husband is straight, who's also retired fire. he watched me do the extra, take the extra classes, go back and get degrees, to take extra certifications that, you know, I know that a lot of my counterparts didn't take and didn't have to take, but I know that I had to. And so in order for me to get the positions that I wanted and the current position that I sit in. And so burnout, yeah, you know what I mean? Like there's no way that, and it's not, you know, a lot of people say, well, you really didn't have to do all of that. But, you know, I don't, you know, outside of wanting to better myself, of course, in order for me to seem or deem qualified, because if I didn't have that, if I just had my years of experience, and you know, Hartford, Connecticut is a busy fire department, you know, we run, you know, thousands and thousands of calls a year. It's not like we're slow or anything like that, but that just would not have been enough for me to promote and to get where I needed to be. And so, you know, myself, and I'm sure I'm not the only one with EMS, you know, we work the overtimes and we spend a lot of time just having to prove the point. Mm-hmm. And so mentally, physically, emotionally, it just wears on you. Yeah. How do we fix that? I spend a lot of time mentoring young ladies about, I know you need to get this promotion, but you also need to make sure you take care of yourself. So right in the middle of, I want to say maybe 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, I literally lost 80 pounds. I was like, okay, I needed to lose weight. I need to work out. I need to get that time alone at the gym. My trainer was like, leave it on the floor. I sweated and left it on the floor. She tried to kill me, but you know, but it helped. It helped. It really did help with the next time I walked into the office. A lot of that stress and that burnout feeling that was coming, it allowed me to be able to do my job. And so that's mainly what I thought about when you asked the question.
Yeah, self-care is so important to help prevent burnout. That, like, you know, like what you said, and it being able to channel some of that stress into physical activity is a good outlet. And I, you know, and what you mentioned about having to overachieve I don't want to use the word overachieve, but really as women, a lot of times that's in a male dominated field, we do feel like we have to overachieve to be noticed, to be taken seriously.
Right.
And I remember a good friend of mine, a chief, he said to me, he said, why do you always seem so serious and angry? And I'm like, well, because if I goofed around, nobody would take me serious. But I'm like, I'm not like that with my friends.
Right.
Why am I like that in a meeting? But it's because I wanted my male counterparts to take me serious. So it does become exhausting because you feel like you're always being watched. So.
Right. We definitely have the feeling of always being watched and always. And I can't, like you said, I can't joke around, you know, people, I have this unique ability to slice you up if I have to with my words, but with a smile on my face. So people often say that I'm too nice. How, you're so nice. You're too nice to be a captain. You're too nice to handle certain situations. You know, I applied for a couple of chief's jobs and got offers for those jobs. And during one of my assessments, they were like, it was an assessment, a personnel disciplinary action type assessment, questions and answers. And they were, and I handled it properly. You know, I fixed the problem like I did. It was an excellent review of what I knew to do in that disciplinary action. And at the end of it, the assessor was like, you did that, but you were so nice. And I was just like, did you want me to be mean and beat the guy up? I mean, like, what did you want me to do? You know, and so, you know, the fire EMS, we, of course, we have the ability to do the job.
Yeah.
And not all of us are hard and angry, but we have to be extremely serious. And so my serious is with a smile on my face. And so people don't know how to take me. You know what I mean? It's like, is she mad or is she not mad? You know?
So the other thing I wanted to ask you is, you belong to a lot of great associations that have been supportive of you. How important, being a part of those associations, how have they supported you in your success and coping with some of that, those burnout feelings?
So years ago, probably about 7 years ago, I don't remember exactly, my chief said to me, you really need to go to this thing called Women in Fire, Women International Women Fire organization. And I wasn't even going to go. I was actually scared to go. I was, you know, it was a point of you not wanting to be different than the guys. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the guys were like, you know, why you want to go to that thing? You know, what are you guys going to do? Sit around and braid each other's hair? You know what I mean? And so I was just like, so my husband literally said, Shelly, you need to go. And so now the organization is called Women in Fire. And let me tell you, if I didn't have Women in Fire, I probably wouldn't have sitting in the position of captain for the Hartford Fire Department. Another organization was the, EDI, Executive Development Institute, with from Dr. Carl Holmes at Dillard University in New Orleans. It's an organization that's for predominantly minorities and that's trying leadership in the fire service. If I didn't have that, I wouldn't realize that I could become a chief officer. I wouldn't have never realized that I could be a leader in the fire service, because usually and this is just for me, I can only talk about me, in my organization, I wasn't getting the information that I needed to progress and become a chief. And so it was really important for me to step outside of my organization, seek out the help from other people. Just like you told me the story that, you know, that I reached out to you. And that way I could try to become outside of my own department, become who I knew I was inside and I was struggling for, but I needed someone to say, hey, you can do this. And Candace, you were Dr. C, you were the one.
Oh, well, thank you. And I want to touch on something that Shelly, I think you demonstrated, that it is okay for us to go outside our own department, our own city, our own county, our own state, to find support to build us up to prevent burnout. It's okay to reach out to different organizations to find mentors across boundaries, be supportive. It's okay to do that, and there's no shame in that at all. Encourage that. It's a wonderful thing. And the great thing about reaching across those geographical boundaries is that you get to open your eyes to how other people view things, to see things through someone else's lens. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, a lot of me going to Women in Fire, a lot of the training I received, a lot of the encouragement I received just for saying, hey, you can do this, you know, be strong, go ahead and pass the test, go ahead and promote, go ahead and do what you need to do, go ahead and rest, go ahead and take a nap, you know what I mean? Go ahead and take care of your kids. Go ahead and work out. A lot of that came from support from Women in Fire. And so it's a great, great opportunity. And now I'm a state rep for Women in Fire. So I'm pretty psyched about that.
Yes. And as a trustee for Women in Fire, I'm so excited that you're part of our team at that level. So makes me so happy. Well, thank you, Shelly, for sharing those answers to that question.
Absolutely.
Hey, James, with all of the stuff you have going on, you know, starting a hospital and emergency services, you know, EMS, whatever you're doing, all of this crazy stuff, how do you not burn out yourself?
Priorities, perspective, those two things, okay? I realize that, you know, I can't achieve everything, you know, but I can do this. I can do that, you know, find the things that I can do, that I can improve, or those areas where it matters. And again, a lot of frustrations back and forth, a lot of that realization, this isn't going to happen overnight. Things that matter aren't easy. They do take work. If I showed up to do these things and said, you know, okay, I did this much, and why aren't they coming true? No, because these things that I want take this much work. And before I commit myself or that expectation, I better be ready and willing to put the time and the effort into that. Like I said, yeah, boy, starting an EMS service for an entire country. Wow. I ain't going to just show up and say, hey, I'm special. And because I'm special, you know, this is how it's going to be. No, research, time, effort, gathering a team, putting the team together, adjusting, looking at the positives and negatives, the benefits, what we have, where we have to work in the infrastructure, all those things. The move over law as well. Lord, that was 25 years and six of it was going, good, somebody, please believe me, this is happening. Right. And again, then when it did, when it finally took off, guess what? The federal government came in and took it over and was like, okay, thank you. We're done with you. It's like, well, I'm not done. I'm not done. I still got things to say. We still have things we can improve. So again, that persistence. And I think that's what it is. Mostly is a stubborn persistence. Mm-hmm. Right? That's, you know, what's kept me going through all this is this God awful stubborn persistence. Some people see it as a benefit because I actually accomplished some things. Some people see it as they just don't like me because that really gets on the nerves. So again, two different takes on me there. And, you know, it's 50-50. I think I'm shooting for more like 70-40 now or 70-30 now. So I'm happier about it. But yeah, looking at EMS, the first thing I want to say about this, about the burnout and everything, the hugest part of it is expectation versus reality. When you're 17, 20, whatever, you're looking for a career, what you want to do, you've been doing some volunteer, you've got a cousin or family on EMS. EMS looks attractive to good people because I can help people. I can be in control. I can charge. I can do something to make a difference and save a life every day. And you go in and you take those classes and you get those skills and you learn this stuff. And then you finally get on that truck and you're making $7 an hour to doing dialysis halls on a 72-hour shift. Okay. The reality of EMS is so far from the projected expectations of the people getting into the field that honestly, most people that get into EMS don't burn out. They don't have time after 3 years. What's our average time for somebody, an EMT coming in? About 3 years. And that's the big one. That's the first one that gets them is after the school. I spent all this time and money to learn this stuff to make $7 an hour. And again, we're still making seven in a lot of places. I was making 10 as a paramedic for the last 20 years, you know, $10 an hour. That's just what we get paid. And that expectation versus reality is such a defeating thing that, you know, you've got to find something other, you know, you've got to find a way to keep it going, to keep encouraged about it. So that's the biggest issue that most people coming into it's going to face. And so, you know, try to get some reality into that. You know, you've got to be tough. This is a tough, hard job. And, you know, male, female, physically it's tough, emotionally it's tough. I don't care, male and female. If you can get up and show up and remember what you're supposed to do and show up and wash your truck and get to that hospital, yay. Keep doing it. Keep showing up. You're doing good. You're saving lives. You may not save every patient. You may not, you know, you're going to have trouble. There's going to be problems, but keep going because you're still doing good. And they don't feel that. Nobody is telling them. Showing up, coming in, caring is good. Thank you. All right. So again, expectation reality is the biggest problem. Next, we're looking at the realistic, that low pay, long hours. You know, who came into EMS thinking I'm going to make a bunch of money and support my family with it? I don't know a single EMS person who works only EMS, their regular 40 hours or whatever, and can support their family and have a car and have a house. We all work 72s because we have to. We all work, you know, 20. My last job, I was driving an hour and a half every morning to work a 12-hour shift because that's what I had to do. That's where the work was. Mm-hmm. And the low pay and those long hours are just so grinding. The sleep deprivation, mm-hmm. the nutrition. We don't eat well. We don't sleep well. I've been out for 3 years and I still cannot sleep. And I don't know that I'll ever sleep well because for 35 years, I was waiting for that phone. I was waiting for that pager. Mm-hmm. And letting that not mess up your circadian rhythm and your just general health, wow, that's a challenge. And again, and as you said, you know, working on your health, considering your health, considering your diet, exercises, those things can help. But boy, you still better have a really strong constitution mentally and physically to survive sleep deprivation and not run off the road.
Yeah.
Number two, physically demanding and dangerous. EMS is the most physically demanding and physically dangerous job ever. Again, not just to slow down, move over stuff. Yes, we're getting whacked all the dang time. But what else are we doing? We're carrying 300 pounders down at four flights of steps with mm-hmm. a, you know, rickety backboard. And, you know, maybe we got a stair chair. Maybe we don't. Depends on whether they're going to spend the money on it. Our exposures, hepatitis, HIV, drugs and stuff, the demands on our body and the risk to our body by EMS are terrifying, you know, and we just kind of ignore them. We don't want to accept them. We don't want to face to them. And that's when we can get sloppy and take risk and get hurt. But again, keeping that in mind that you know, you want to live past EMS. You want to get through this. How do most people get out of EMS? With a back injury.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the number one. Why'd you quit EMS? I hurt my back lifting somebody, carrying down a flight of stairs, carrying up. And we know about back injuries. We wear our belts. We lift correctly. We get the stretchers. It doesn't matter. When you're doing that repetitive lifting nonstop every day, it's going to catch up to you.
And I think that's like, you know, it kind of goes back to, you know, what Shelly was sharing about getting a trainer, getting in shape. You know, what can you do to help combat that? Because, yeah, EMS is so hard on your body. I mean, I think everybody that I know that is towards the end of their career, they do have those on the job injuries. So it's important that we are eating healthy, taking care of ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Moving on. Number three. And again, I got my little list here. And I'm trying to. And the hard part about working EMS is every one of these, you want to tell a war story. God, we love war stories. And for every one of these, I could sit here for 3 hours and give you 10 examples of each of them. And again, for us, we got to reel that in because, you know, the time constraints and all. Number three, and this is a part that affected me and most of the people I see the most, is the worst of humanity. My job from 6 o'clock in the morning till next Tuesday when somebody shows up to relieve me was DUI, drug addict, overdose, abuse, rape, molestation, children. You know, yes, we occasionally got the nice person who had a, you know, who twisted their ankle once a year. But every day, day in, day out, every call that I ran was the most, you know, how many raped children do you need to see in a month and still love your job? Do you have that in you? Do you have that constitution to bring in the 23-year-old's fifth overdose and dying in your truck and you done saved him 4 times and this time you didn't? How many times are you going to do that and it not destroy the joy in your heart and your life?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have an answer for that one. That one is simply when you come in, you should know this. When your first week of EMS or first week of EMS EMT school, somebody say, can you do this? Okay. I had the worst, everybody, we all have our worst call. What's your worst call ever? You know, that's, everybody wants to ask EMS that. I'll tell you, don't, because you don't want to know. My worst call is my wife had a miscarriage and my first shift coming back, I had a young woman that was her fifth baby. She was 7 months pregnant and she was so cracked out. The child was ripping itself out of her stomach.
Ugh.
How do you do that every single day of your life over and over and not hate everything?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And tell you the truth, most people do. What's wrong? You look at this guy over here, burnout. How long you been in? I don't care. A year, 2 years, 3 months, 10 years. This is what we do every single day of our lives, in and out. And you don't have time to recover. As soon as you drop them off, here comes the next one. Here comes the next one, over and over. There's a great movie. There's a bunch of movies. You ever watch a movie about a paramedic? And it's like, not Nicolas Cage, some other one where he had a patient and he brought him in and he got involved and their family had this issue and he started helping out the family. Honest to God, I don't think I ever had much of an opportunity to follow up on a patient's condition and on their family and the domestic situation. And, you know, I'm a nice guy and I care about you for that 27 minutes, but I got people waiting and I can't emotionally invest myself in every call that I run. Maintaining that professional distance, how do you get over that? Maintaining that professional distance by not emotionally investing yourself in every tragedy that you see. And I tell you, that takes a real special person to do that.
You know, and okay? I think the other thing that I hear you saying is that, and I think for those that are in leadership positions, is that how important it is to have those mental health resources, you know, plugging them in your organization, talking about that, as you said, you know, in EMT and medic schools, saying, here's some of the things that you're going to be exposed to that can take a toll on your mental health. Here's some of the signs to watch for as you decline in your mental health. And here's where you can go to get some help. And I always tell people, don't just talk to the EMS folks, but talk to their families. offer to have a session at your station for spouses or significant others to talk about mental health and say, if you would see this within your loved one, here's who you can call to get some help, because who's going to see it first? It's going to be the family. So if we can educate, the family members and the people that care about our EMS professionals, we can kind of help to get people the help that they need before they're pushed too far.
Absolutely.
All of us in the medical field, the nurses and the medics and the docs that I work with, we all went into this career thinking we could save everyone. We want to save everyone. And you're right. The repeat people that come in that you just saved last week, that you helped, you set them up with food and a place to live and resources, and they do it all over again. And, the first pediatric code that you have, you never forget those things. And that's not something that you can teach somebody new coming in. You can advise them like, yeah, we see a lot of gross things here. And I get the same question that you said, what's the worst thing you've ever seen in the ER?
Oh, you don't want to know.
There's lots of things, you never want to know because you don't want to know.
All right. Next thing that's a significant, and Shelly, do you have anything to put in there, Michelle?
I was going to say, Shelly, you have anything to offer on dealing with the mental health aspect of this job? Hope you're on mute, Shelly.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Just recently we lost a firefighter here in Connecticut, line of duty death. And so we pray for his family. And yeah, we also have a firefighter that's in the hospital, who's doing better. Thankfully he was in critical condition, but he's doing better. Thank God. But I was talking to one of my girlfriends about it, who lives in Tennessee. And she said, she made a real point where she was like, as EMS or firefighters, we have this index, our brain is this, a bunch of index cards. And you know how we used to have index cards in that small little index box? So our brain is the index box. And every time we go to a call, every time we go to an incident, that information is stored on that card and we slip it into the box. And so if you have, say, 3 months on the job and you see a gunshot victim and you see a gunshot victim in at a fire and an arson, let's just say, and the person dies at the scene. That's a memory that you're gonna put on that card. You're gonna stick it in the box. So and how you dealt with that call, how you mitigated that call, how you handled the patient, how you made sure that they was it a police investigation or whatever the situation is, how that was handled. You record that information, mm-hmm, and you stick it in that box. So that's say week three from drill school. Now we're here 20 years later, how many of those cards are in that box? You know what I mean? How much of that information have you stored? You stored every single, because we build upon what we learn from day one, right? That's what we do in drill school. We build every time we go take a class, every time we practice those ladder raises, every time we practice lifting patients, right? We store that and then we use it in person. We store that information. How much can your box hold before you need help with that? It becomes heavier and heavier and heavier till you really don't have much more room. And so what she said to me, which was phenomenal, she's a retired chief. She was like, Shelly, you need to step away from fire for a moment. Just step away. Maybe dump out some of that stuff in that box. And then that way you can clear your mind. Because it's in there. Even when we're off of work, even when we're not working, we're driving by a scene, and what are we doing?
Assessing. Yeah, absolutely. You know what
I mean? Like, how can I get out of my car and go help the situation? You know what I mean? Even in jeans and a sweatshirt, right? And mm-hmm, so a lot of times we just have to realize that, again, we can't fix everybody. We can't heal everybody. We can't rescue everybody. But we do have to take the time to look within ourselves and heal ourselves and rescue ourselves so that we can be better for the people that we serve.
Absolutely. I think that's right. A great point. And I think that it's easy to let our job or volunteer position become our identity,
right.
And what you said about stepping away, I think that's where we have to be very careful that we don't let our job or our volunteer position become everything that we're about, our identity, because it's going to let us down. And then we become broken. So it's important that we create our own identity outside of the workplace or volunteer place and find activities that are enjoyable so that, you're not all fire, all EMS, but you have other outlets, things that you enjoy.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And James, absolutely. It's real important. I go shopping all the time. My husband can vouch for that.
Candace and I do impromptu vacations to the beach. So yeah,
that's great. That's great. Yeah. That's great.
I think, go ahead. Sorry.
the next thing that I think is a huge impact on all of us is my favorite part about finally getting out of EMS, you know, alive, is my wallet. You know what's special about my wallet? It's this thick. Okay, we all have sciatica from sitting on that nest of 37 different certifications we have to maintain and take yearly to stay, you know, to stay employed, right? And so here's a problem. If I'm taking PALS, PEP, NRPs, I've got 27 different ones, and they're all giving me different numbers, different values, okay? Inconsistency of protocols across the board. This state, this county, this region, many places that I work, if I was here in this county and drive through this county, I can't do this and while I'm passing through that county. Okay. We have so many different things being thrown at us that are, you know, if I can treat a patient and get the patient better, if I can treat them kindly and give them something that keeps them from deteriorating, I'm happy. Right. That's my job, to get them to definitive care. But oh my gosh, if this guy, this Monday morning quarterback, comes in later and says, well, why didn't you do it like I would have done it? You know, why didn't you do this? Well, because my protocol, and this is our jobs. Last place before last that I worked, you know, we would have our testing every, you know, 3 or 4 months, and you have to pass these tests to stay employed. And the last test I took, it's like, okay, it's a pediatric arrest, run through your protocol, and it's 2 joules per kg. For cardioversion on a peak, right? Well, the person doing the test, they took a different course and they said it was 4 joules per kg. Well, it's 2 and then 4. And it's like, wait a second, because we took different training to different standards for the same subject, I'm going to lose my job because that's a critical pass. And I'm going to fail because I gave a 2 joules from the PALS instead of the 4 joules from the NRP. I'm going to lose my job. Okay. How do we deal with that? What can we do for that inconsistency of protocols across districts, across providers, across agencies, where there's so many different standards? What's the right thing? How do you know what to do? And let's not mention the fact that it changes every year.
Yeah, and I think that's where, when we talk about advocacy, that's where we have to speak up and say, how can we bring all these regulatory boards together to be on the same page so that we can share some of those frustrations? Here's what we're experiencing, and we want to be change agents. We want to fix this, and how can we start to get people talking? And it might not be something that changes overnight, but, you know, that's how we, you know, we start to gain some power back by starting to bring those connections and saying, okay, you know, what board can I volunteer for so that I can have a voice and say, here's where I'm seeing some frustrations.
One of the things that I did was I started to work as an adjunct instructor for the Connecticut Fire Academy, because I knew that first of all, there was no one there working there that looked like me. That's number one. And so I wanted to be able to bring in some diversity, as well as being, you know, the first person that another woman, you know, as a new firefighter would see, could walk into a classroom and see me, and see someone that looks like me, you know what I'm saying? And so, you know, since I've started working there, I think I've been there for 3 years, I wanna say. It's been phenomenal. I've made connections with young ladies that, you know, that have never really seen a female firefighter, or didn't know that we existed, or didn't know we had female firefighters that were officers or chiefs or captains. And my first thing out of my mouth is, first of all, you can do this. And second of all, don't kill yourself. You know what I'm saying? Because we have that mentality as women in the fire service that we have to be better. We have to do it better. And certain ways to do it so that you can still have your mental health while doing it. You know what I mean? And so it's important that, you know, police, fire, EMS, that we understand that I can only speak about women because that's who I am. And the whole idea is, like Candace, Dr. C said, making sure you volunteer or go into the boards or ask, you know, to teach a class or sit in a classroom. I walk in a classroom and most of the times I'm the only female in the classroom. You know what I'm saying? And so and it's not my brother's fault. I love my brother firefighters. Please don't take it the wrong way. But you know, a lot of us don't step out into the water. We just don't because we're not sure. We're uncertain, you know, what we're going to be, how we're going to be received or perceived if we do that. And so as a female firefighter, it was really important for me to take classes and to teach classes. And to be that person that other women in the fire and emergency service, you half the time when I step off the fire truck, you know, and the EMS, you know, at all of the million of EMS calls that we go to, the first thing that the paramedics say, they know me now, but they were like, "Where'd you come from?" You know what I mean? And just it's phenomenal, and that's all the connection we had. Like James said, that 27 minutes, the connection is all of 15 minutes. But she knows is it someone that's out there, or when we walk into the ER and they're like, "Oh my goodness, it's a lady and she's in charge," you know? And so it's real important that, you know, that we step into those classrooms and step into teaching others, teaching, volunteering, joining boards and being on commissions and things like that. It's super important for us to be out there like that.
So what I see a common theme between you and James, when I hear you talk about teaching and being involved, I see you light up. That's your way to be a change agent. And James, you know, when I hear you talk about what you're doing in Cambodia, I see you taking, you know, all of those frustrations from years of EMS, but taking your experience and channeling it into something that you're passionate about and something and doing something good with it. I mean, and so you're making change in a whole nother region on the globe. I mean, that is so cool.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really cool.
Thank you. And again, over there, they have nothing. Again, there's two big hospitals, foreign hospital nonprofits, a couple in Siem Reap and in Phnom Penh. But for the rest of the country, there's no Western medical care. I mean, you break your leg, they're going to take a sack and put a snake head in it with you and tie it around your neck for a couple of days. Folk medicine is still, you know, the driving force there. And trying to get Western medicine in, it's a challenge. Do you know why you can't get any EMS workers there? Because they're afraid of ghosts. I'm not kidding you. A big part of what we have to deal with is overcoming that, you know, folk fears, traditional, that, you know, we can do this. So yeah, I and again, finding those, you know, and you really have to understand the culture and the country to be able to make something work, adapt to that culture. One of the big reasons this has been tried before, every couple of years, some group comes in with some ambulances, some monitors, and here's what happens. They show up with a, you know, $300,000 ambulance and $500,000 defibrillator monitor and all kind, and they come in and they wow these people with their technical expertise so far above their skill level that the minute they leave, everything they brought is sold and gone, and nobody has ever helped. And it's like, well, why don't you teach them to turn them over and open their airway, you know, stop the bleeding, this is a chroma, that's a Cambodian scarf that they all wear. This is a sling, okay? This is a wrap, this is a bandage. All of them have one. Use their culture, what they have in their culture, to reach them so that they can understand it. Don't come in there saying that, okay, you know, you've got a couplet on your PVC here, and so we need to, that's not gonna save their lives, okay? Getting them to not be afraid of ghosts, to be supported. There's no Good Samaritan law over there. That's another challenge of this that we're looking at is, you know, we expect that here. If I save somebody's life here and something happens, I'm fine. In Cambodia, when I had my clinic, if somebody had died at my clinic, I would have went to jail. because there's no Good Samaritan law over there. So again, understanding their culture and how it relates and fitting EMS to what will work with what they have. That's the challenge there. Bringing that back to our list of problems for us here. One of the big problems that we'll see is straight up, come on, everybody groan with me, ambulance driver. I promise you, NASA scientists, you sit down with me. We can have an intelligent conversation about black holes and dark matter because I love that stuff. We can, you know, and I can talk. I'm a pretty smart guy. But when I walk into that door, that ER, I'm the ambulance driver. And here's a doctor. Here's a nurse. Here's a PA. And these guys are making $200,000, $300,000 an hour. And here comes me, my $12 an hour self, you know, walking in as an ambulance driver. And whatever I've got to say is not valued. Okay. My job, my work, my opinion, because is it because they don't understand? Is it a cultural thing? Why is EMS the very bottom rung of the ladder below physical therapist, below, you know, everybody in the medical field? I value you. You went to school, you're working hard, you're there to save lives. So how come when I walk in, it's a, hey, ambulance driver, you left your motor running and the diesel fumes are getting in the bay?
So let's turn to Robin for that one. So Robin, how do you bridge the gap between the ED and EMS to build that relationship, to make sure that our EMS folks feel valued? Or if we have EMS departments in an area where they don't feel valued for their ER, how can they reach out to the hospital to kind of work on that relationship? What advice would you have for them? Oh, Robin, you're on mute.
Darn it. Sorry, the dog came in the room and I forgot. So one thing that I did when I first opened the freestanding emergency department that I'm over is I had all of my nurses go and do ride along time with the different fire departments around us. It was kind of eye-opening for some of them to see what EMS does on their side of it. You're walking into these homes that are gross. You're making decisions on your own. I have a doctor with me all the time. You guys are going by protocol, so you have to know your stuff. Another thing is, you know, when paramedics bring patients into the emergency department, we don't make them wait. I will pull a patient out into the hallway to put my EMS into a room. It's just building that relationship. We're on the same team. We take care of the same patients. I respect what you are doing on your side of it. There are always times when, you know, you have a nurse that gets a little like, oh, you didn't start a line for me. And I'm like, you don't know what they were doing in the back of that truck. What do you think they were doing? So it's just putting that perspective together. We do a lot, the facility that we work for EMS, because we are part of the same team. We recognize them for EMS week. We get them snacks. Their EMS break room is loaded all the time with ice cream and sandwiches and chips and whatever they want. So it's just building the relationship and making the awareness to everyone that it's not them against us. We're on the same team.
Yeah, absolutely. That was great points. And we have just a couple of minutes here. So I want to kind of wrap up everything that we talked about tonight and some of the great points. One, I heard a lot about mental health. So it's important for us to take care of our mental health. So if you are not connected with mental health resources through your department, find out what your county has. The National Volunteer Fire Council has a hotline that's for fire and EMS career and volunteer that you can call through the Share the Load program to get connected with a mental health professional. So share those resources within your department. So, you know, and look out for your brothers and sisters in EMS, you know, make sure that they're okay. Share those resources with their family. The other takeaway that we heard tonight was find ways to get involved. Both James and Shelley talked about different ways that they got involved to create change. So find those ways. Don't let a closed door be the end of a conversation. Mm-hmm. Hey, most of us are firefighters and EMS. We break down the walls. We break the windows. We find a way to get in and create change. Other things that we heard tonight was self-care. You know, Shelley talked about getting fit. James talked about our bodies falling apart. So we got to take care of ourselves. We got to eat right. We got to be physically fit. So find some ways to do that. Find an accountability partner to help push you to meet your goals. Some of the other things that we heard tonight is you have to be brave and seek opportunities. You got to be willing to say, hey, I want to get involved, knock on doors and say, how can we make change and how can I be a part of that? Another cool thing that we heard tonight was about establishing partnerships. You know, Robin just talked about how the ED had the nurses going out with the fire departments to do ride-alongs. That's establishing a partnership between your EMS organization and your hospital. So if you're feeling not appreciated by your hospital, reach out to your nurse manager at the ED and say, hey, we want to build a partnership. Would your nurses like to do a ride along? And I bet a lot of them would jump on that. So that would be a great experience. And the last point that I want to leave you with as we talk about preventing burnout and EMS is be the difference. Don't just sit back and complain, you know, find a way, find a solution and just be the difference. So I want to thank both of our guests tonight. Thank you both so much for being a part of our podcast on burnout. And if you guys want to give a quick short message to our EMS folks for EMS week, I'll start with you, Shelley. If you want to wish our EMS folks a great EMS week.
Have a great, great EMS week. First of all, make sure you take care of yourself. And know that we in the fire department, fire service, really do appreciate you. I know we sit back and sometimes you wait, be like, oh, where's the ambulance? Where's the ambulance? But it's just because we know that you rock it every time you come up on scene. That's all I have to say. Dr. C, thank you so much for this opportunity. Ms. Robin, thank you for this opportunity. You guys are all truly amazing. James, hook me up with that Cambodia idea. Maybe we can do some girls camps out there.
Yeah.
And, no, you know what? Continue to rock the EMS world. We all need you. Fire, police, EMS, military. We're all brothers and sisters. Thank you so much, Dr. C.
Thank you. James?
Okay. The most important message I could ever say to anybody, be kind. Be kind. Be a decent human being. Karma. All this stuff comes back. What kind of person do you want to be? Educate others, be a mentor, but most of all, grow a good heart. Okay, realize that what you do, what you think, what you say affects other people. And just take a moment and remember just how important kindness is. That's it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you both again for being on the show. And we're going to sign off. I'm Dr. Candace McDonald.
I'm Robin Goldinger.
And we'll see you next time.